I think it's really momentous. I believe that, you know, the first. We have the general sessions, but the real working session's not at 12:30 a.m., so.
So hopefully we'll be finished well before then. First of all, thank you all for coming. Project Inspire is a revolution. It's a revolution. It's not just a movement, but it's a revolution. Project Inspire, over the last 2 years, has enlisted over 5,000 people who have decided to volunteer to do Kiruv. Now, however you look at that, it's a tremendous uftu. It's a tremendous ach. You have thousands of people, thousands of frumah yidden. You know, you think and they have fulfillment in their life and they have actualization, they're doing things and they've mamish the erlich yidden. And to join up in such a way is a hafadik azach. So I want to give special karas hatayv to the Downs that hosting the Project Inspire and hosting in their home, the Beis Hashem, we should see gevaldike peiros. Let's first understand what we're doing here tonight. We have a problem. We like to think Baruch Hashem, everything's terrific, and it is. I mean, Baruch Hashem, we have a Kol Torah emanating from yeshivas today, unlike anything that certainly I knew my entire life. You know, I grew up, I guess the first generation right after the Holocaust, as I'm going to identify. There were probably, in the entire yeshiva system in the United States of America, the same number of people as there are in a single grade today. Yeah, and include preschool. If you take all the preschool children today, there's more of them, Baruch Hashem, B'liayin Har, Ken Yerbu, than there was in the entire yeshiva system in Gantz America, maybe even Eretz Yisrael too. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. So Baruch Hashem, there's no question, anyone who wants to learn Torah today, has a real desire, is able to learn it. There's no question of that today. Chaz de Hashem, it's a mamash gavaldik kazach. And how we're learning. We're learning on a level. We're mamash learning on a level. It's haflo afella. We have been able to establish chumras and kashrus that are unbelievable. It's not unbelievable. I will tell you that my father was Agi in the Yid, he was a Chash of the Yid. You know, my father drank Chav Yisrael. We, the children, did not, you know, because the Kahal truck would come and he would leave one bottle of, you know, my father, Kol Yungoman, he'd leave one bottle, that's what, you know, they could afford, and then we had, that's what we had. There was one bottle a week of milk. That was Chav Yisrael. Otherwise, what Chav Yisrael? Who knew Chav Yisrael? Before Pesach, we used to have to travel all the way to Lower East Side to go buy some cheese for Pesach. Literally, I'm talking about the 1950s. I mean, today, you walk into the co-op, you walk into these stores today, it's Mavla Larayin. It's Mavash Mavla Larayin. To be able to have Pas Yisrael, I mean, like, you know, who would dream of such things? Everything is Yashan, it's Mavash Gav, it's unbelievable, it's Haflo Fela. What we have today is something that we take for granted, but it's Mavash Haflo Fela. So one would think that Baruch Hashem, we've done well, and we have. There's one small problem. All of those things affect less than 10% of Klal Yisrael. If you're going to be a real Yid, and you're going to really be a member of Klal Yisrael, you're going to think globally a little bit, then you have to recognize that 90% of Klal Yisrael has no shaychus to this. They're Gantz and Ogefrem, they have nothing to do with anything Yiddish. If you were to open a newspaper, New York Times on Sunday, they have the social pages, and they have there who's getting married to whom. They still have it to today. You know, wealthy families, certainly, they print these ads and the thing, congratulations, to marry that one. Sunday Times has it. If you take a look at it, you'll see the vast majority, Le'aleinu, are Yidden to Goyim. The vast majority. You have 70, 80% of people, Yidden, who are marrying Goyim. In the big cities. This is an unbelievable statistics. The majority of Jewish students on campus today no longer self-identify as being Jewish when you ask them what the religion they are. A majority of Jewish students that are completely halachically Jewish, a majority of them, when you ask them what religion they are, more than 50% will say either something other than Jewish or they won't say Jewish. These are people of God's nugget friend. So we would think, Baruch Hashem, everything's terrific. The fact is, there are 5 million Jews in America who have no Shaykhah to Bar Eilam. 5 million of them. If you want to say that the Frum community is 10% of the larger community, so that between 5 and 600,000 Jews were Shomer Torah in the United States of America. This is what we're talking about. Imagine for a moment if someone had 10 children and 9 of them, Chalila, went off the Derech. If Chalila, one son, there's one problem, one issue with a kid, if it's a shkafa, there's a problem, we can't sleep at night. The Bari Olam's children, 9 out of 10 of them, have no shaykhis to them. So to think that we're in good shape is stamatois. It's an extremely narrow-minded view of Klal Yisrael. to think that we're in good shape is a big problem. I'm not saying that, I'm not being kafri toiv on what we have. We have mamash gevaldige zachen. But there's no question that globally speaking, we're in a whole lot of trouble. So people like to say that's what curative professionals are for. The real number of full-time curative professionals in the United States of America is somewhere around 500. The number that's bandied about is about 1,500. If you want to include every Chabad person in the world who has a Chabad house, it's 1,500. If not, you're talking about 500 full-time professionals. 500 full-time professionals, and their job is to reach 5 million Jews. How many does each professional have to reach? My math is faulty. How much is it?
1,000.
1,000 people. The best cure professional in the world is not making 1,000 people from anytime soon, as far as I can tell. So how do we do it? What are we going to do? So the answer is, we're it. We have Baruch Hashem educated tens of thousands of Bnei Torah. Many of us taka go back into chinuch, and by the way, some of them are the best cure professionals. We're not the best cure volunteers on their own, they do it. Mechanchim have to be a fantastic resource, because they're fantastic not just in teaching Yiddish Kinderlach, Frum Kinderlach, but also others as well. They're teachers, they're great. But you know what, unless the rest of us are pressed into service as well, we're not going to get anywhere. And Baruch Hashem, the system is such today that every yeshiva that produces Talmidim today, we don't teach people to become Balabatim. We teach people to become Rashi Yeshiva. So according to my cheshbon, there's probably every single year about 2,000 or 3,000 frustrated Rashi Yeshiva out there who've got no place to teach. That's the way I look at it. If you're just married to Rashiva's daughter, you know, you ain't making it. Let's be honest. Unless you open up your own. I mean, and Lakewood still has some room, but you know, we're running out over there also. So the pshat is, we have created a tremendous force, a tremendous kahila of people who not only were taught to learn, were taught to teach. And therefore, we are it. We're the resource, and we can go out and do tremendous things. So first, let's understand, now that we identified who the target audience is, it's us, let's understand what achiyuvim are. There are people who like to think that it's like donating blood. Donating blood is a big mitzvah, but if it's not an individual who you're donating blood to, you know, they have a blood drive, and they have a truck, pulls up, it's a gevaldik kazakh, don't get me wrong, it's a chesed for sure. In Hilchas Chesed, there's no question, it's a gevaldik kazakh. But lemaisa, it's ashenazach. It's ashenazach, but to say, to have a psak from somebody, everybody's mechuyiv to give blood once a month, we don't have that. Because it's taka ashenazach, but you're not going to make it chiyuv. It could be kirov is the same thing. Maybe kirov is ashenazach. Azichvil, I do it, I don't want to do it. Me, who says I have to do it? What do I have to do it for? So the Chofetz Chaim wrote a sefer, and the sefer is called Chaim HaSadas. I'm sure you all heard the story by the Knesset Gedoyla. The Chofetz Chaim seized the podium b'koyach, and he spoke about the upcoming Holocaust. From all the Gedoyla, it seems that the Chofetz Chaim had the most clarity about it. It seems that way. Shal Shudas in Yeshiva, by the way, and Rodney used to speak about the Holocaust. He spoke about it. And he said the reason is, he wrote in the Chaim HaSadas, is because we're not taking achrayis for the Yidden who are not keeping HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah mitzvahs. That we're nitfas v'oisam ha-chatoyim. In other words, whatever averes they do, we're nitfas in those chatoyim. We're not doing it. Vaistos the Olam wasn't ready to hear it. So he went up a second time and he took the podium b'kayach. He says, no, matuch kiret, but that is done, right? So he wrote a sefer called Chaim HaSadas and he outlines what the obligations of chiyuv are, obligations of kiruv are. So you should know, first of all, there's an obligation of Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha. Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha. What does that mean? Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha means that each and every one of us are mechuyev to love our brothers and sisters. Ahavas Re'im. What does that mean? Madasani Lach L'chaver Chal Tavid. That's the negative. And in the positive, if any one of us, Chalila, suffered a loss, we are mechuyev to help the other person. If a person is going to suffer a loss, we're mechuyev to help the person avoid the loss. The Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha is all encompassing. We have to be dalekav schus. A lot of things we have to do. When we have Yidden out there who are losing their entire nitzchias, they're losing their olam haba, you don't think that we have a chiyuv? Says the Chofetz Chaim, the Ahavta Re'acha Kamecha, you see a Yid out there who's not keeping Torah mitzvahs, he's losing his nitzchias, you have to go out and do something. Number two, the mitzvah of Shavas Haveda. If someone loses something which is worth a pruta, you have to go out, you have to make an ishtadlis to go return that to that person. If person's going to lose their olam haba, you don't have to do it. Says the Chofetz Chaim, Kavachoyma, Bebenoi Shal Kavachoyma, that we have an obligation. It's a chiyuv. These are not, it's not a shein ezach. It's much more than a shein ezach. It's mamash a chiyuv in every one of us. There's a mitzvah of Avas Hashem, and the way some Rishonim put it is, Sheyehei, Shem Shemayim, Misahei, Val Yodecha. What is happening with the Chedah B'nai Yisrael is not a Kiddush Hashem. These people are not walking around loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If anything, it's a massive hypnosis that's going on where people talk about it being agnostic and atheistic. It's mamish geferlich. And religion in the Gas has a bad name. And unfortunately, our brothers and sisters are part of it. Maybe they're the heads of it. Shehei Shem Shemayim Messiah Val Yudecha. It's a chiyuv. It's a deraisa. By the way, Mitzvah Havas Hashem is not only deraisa, it's from the Sheish Mitzvah Tamidiyais. It means it's obligatory 365, 24/7. There's no base manas for that. There's a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. There's a mitzvah of Bimikad Hashem Shemayim. The current situation that's going on is certainly not a Kiddush Hashem. It's certainly not a Kiddush Hashem. What's going on, that the vast majority of Klal Yisrael, Rubah the Rubah of Klal Yisrael, has no connection and involved in Gefelech Haveris, is not a Kiddush Hashem. There's a mitzvah of Leisamod Al Dam Reyecha. Leisamod Al Dam Reyecha means that even if someone's going to suffer a financial loss, if someone, you have a friend, and this friend's about to enter in a partnership with a Chaver, and you happen to know that this Chaver is someone who's not trustworthy, you can't stand idly by. You can't do that. You got to let him know. So certainly when someone's going to lose their nitzchias, there's a din of leisamod adam reyacha for the entire neshama, for the whole nitzchias. It's extremely critical. There's a mitzvah of arvis from the time that Klai someone into Eretz Yisrael, Kol Yisrael, Arevim, Zebozeh. It's a mitzvah of arvis. What's this arvis? We have a mechanism by which a person can be mitzi somebody else with a mitzvah. Because of arvis. How are you mitzi somebody with Kiddush? Why make Kiddush already? I'm already yoytze the mitzvah. I'm no longer mechuyev. If not a mechuyev mitzvah, I can be mitzvah in a mitzvah. We all know the shaylos to come up with Abdullah. There are all kinds of shaylos. How are you mitzvah someone with Kiddush if that person was in yoytze if I already made Kiddush? How does it happen? Like, I eat the cake and you gain the calories, you gain the weight, right? Like, me, how does it, there's a mechanics. How does it work? How's the lumbus of it? So, of course, Rabaran, Zecharin Levracha, Mishnah Rabaran, he talks about the mechanics of Arvis. How does my Arvis work? It's very simple. We all know that Klai Yisrael is Guf Echad. So Guf Echad means that if you have been Mekayim Mitzvah yet, since we're Guf Echad, felt up is by me Reichet. Says Rabbi Aaron, a Chiddush in that, the Chagres Rechiddush. Not the Pshat is felt by me because of Arvas, that you have a Chiyuv, and if I'm a Chuyuv, and you're a Kiddush. So Rabbi Aaron, if you didn't make Kiddush and I make Kiddush, felt in my Kiddush. So Mele, my Mitzvah is not complete, because there's some Yid out there who's not doing it. So it means that even if we're Zahirim and Kashrus, if you got you get the biggest hodder and an esrog that's possible, you spend the most amount of money, and you for weeks and weeks you're standing there with the loop, and your mamash, you get every single, you get the best esrog, your esrog is chaser, Rabbi Isai. If there's someone who's living next door to you and they don't have an esrog at all. Not the pshah is this felt mir because it's felt in my entire mitzvahs, it's felt in Hilchas Kiruv, but it's felt in Hilchas esrog felt. That's not a hodder. That's Rabban, Mishras Rabban. Then there's a mitzvah in the Torah, deraisa, cheyach techiach es amisecha. It's a mitzvah techocha. That if we see someone doing something, that we have to act. The Rambam, the way Rambam learns techocha is lechiach means to prove or to teach. So it means that everybody has a chiyuv mamash. So we're talking here about chiyuvim, we're not talking about sheina mitzvah, we're talking about chiyuv mamash. Let's put it together to make it very powerful. See, living Baruch Hashem in Lakewood, Chaz de Hashem, Yira Taira, Mamash Taka, beautiful. And you have a neighbor across the street, a very nice person, nice man, very nice fellow, he's Jewish, he's not from, Chal not from. He's been nice to you, so nice that maybe he used to make a barbecue every Friday night, and now with the loud music. He takes a ladle kite, he makes the music a little quieter, maybe, you know. He puts on maybe a kosher frank on it together with the tarfus, you know, like to show these Jewish, whatever. Nice person. Lachamei v'esrim shana, come upstairs. And there's two lines. There's a line for from people up there, and there's a line for not from people. We hopefully the from line is the easy pass, we hope. It's a little easy to get through. So you're standing on a line. And the other line, the not from line, is standing your neighbor. Passed away at the same time. So he looks up and tries to catch your attention. He recognizes you. So he goes, hi! And you go, Hi. And he says, haven't seen you in a while. I say, yeah. And he says, I want to ask you a question. You knew about this? Say, about what? You know, like heaven and the other place? Like, you know about this? Like Torah? And it's, she looked at him, the full little uncovers. He said, yeah. I said, I don't understand you. Remember the time that you went away to the Catskills for 3 weeks? Your mail was piling up. I thought maybe the thieves in the neighborhood would notice them. So I took in the mail for you. When I gave it back to you, was there a single envelope missing? I gave it all back to you, right? Remember the time you were away for the winter, you went to Florida, I shoveled your walk. I did that, right? I mean, was I a good neighbor? You know, you were a wonderful neighbor. You really were a wonderful neighbor. Then how could you do this to me? My entire mitzvah was at stake and you did nothing? Picture for a moment exactly what your answer is going to be. And if you're like most people, you're going to come up empty-handed. What are you going to say? I really didn't care about you. What are you going to say? I was too busy. The entire nitzchis was at stake, and we did nothing for it. Number two, a person can be makbid v'tachlis hakashrus. I mean, I know Yidden who only eat meat that from a very small shechita, where they shech maybe not more than 5-10 animals a day, and where they know the sheichit, and they don't even rely on the triber, you know, for fenikur, and they got to have their own. And I know people like that. They split up a zeitel, you know, from a flesh, you know, and they split it up. Tachas akashas. According to what we're saying, it's gan tzitoch, and that person comes upstairs. Lachamei v'aser. And Rabbeinu Shalom says, why didn't you keep kosher a single day in your life? And the person says, wait a second, Rabbeinu Shalom, you want to catch me a lashon hara, you know, b'chulam b'avak, you know, that's, you know, but this one, you're not going to get me off because, you know, tachas akashas by me and my house. Are you kidding? Yeah, but you had someone living right next door to you. And you didn't say a thing. The good thing about Kirov is that even if you don't succeed, but you try, then you are pulling yourself out of all of these problems. If you just try, you pull yourself out of all these problems. There's an inyan of a mesis umediach. What happens when someone is a mesis, but he's not successful as a mesis? What does that mean? Guy is a big apikairis. He decides he's going to try to be mesis Rav Aaron Leibstein. So he takes a couple of his mesisim with him. They go to Bnei Brak and they knock on the door of Rav Aaron Leib. They go into the house. He says, Rav Aaron Leib, good door, Ben Zara. Rav Leib has this guy there, Rosengarten, standing there, and some other guy. They take this mesis, they throw him out the window, and he lands in a crumpled heap outside, and fablutik like this outside. Is he a mesis or not? La-lacha. He's 100% a mesis. He's 100% a mesis. If you married him, you can't be Milam. You can't be down Lekav Schos, only Lekav Choyva. Everybody else, you brought Lekav Misa Yafa. By him, there's nothing. Everything's off the table. There's no Avis Reim. There's nothing. He's a shtick garnished. The guy's finished. But he wasn't successful. He's called the Mesis L'Rab. And he's finished. So after Baron, what about a Mesis L'Tayf? Who's not successful? So somebody goes in to someone who's a Mechal Shabbos and he does not have all the Kiruv tools. They didn't come to a Project Spire home Kiruv training seminar. They didn't come to the Dams tonight. And he doesn't know what he's doing. And he goes with a couple of chavrimis and he goes into the house with Hashem. You're Mechal Shabbos that you are! You gotta keep Shabbos! And the guy takes him, throws him out the window in a crippled heap. You're not allowed to be down Lekav Chayv, that person. Only Lekav Teva. You hear this? You can't criticize him. Because he's a Mesis L'Tayv. This is called a Mesis. He was not successful. You hear what we're talking about here? You can't fail. You can't fail, even if you do the wrong thing. But if you tried, it was a good ishtadlis. You didn't know better. You tried, this is the best way you tried. We're soon going to see that trying ultimately is succeeding. It's completely succeeding beyond your wildest dreams. One of the greatest benefits that all of us who are involved in Kirov get from Kirov is what it does to us. There's a certain passion and excitement that Slavas, that Balei Tshuva have, that we should all be extremely coveting, we should be jealous of. There's a certain Islam, and they say a Meister, Rabbi Yonasan Shtayev, Rabbi Yonasan Shtayev was on stage to write a skama for Kirov Yeshiva. So they went to him, and he's signing a letter, whatever. So he looks at the letter. He said, Nein, nein, nicht das habe ich gewollt. Ich wollte es gewollt, allein ein Arsch haben. He wanted to If your line's on a Baal Tshuva. That's what he said. He didn't want to sign a letter, he wanted to register, right? There's a lot to be said for that, because the emes is, the slavas that these people have is unbelievable. I will tell you that for the first time in my life, I learned that it's possible to be mechavim, a yeheshmei rab, every yeheshmei rab. Why? Because one of like the guys that became from through me, he figured out a whole way that you can be mechavim every time, and you could do it. He put it on a card for me, and you have the image in your head. You know the schus of yeheshmei rab? Afilu nigzal gzeir shalshim shanim avirim lo. You know that? I mean, it's unbelievable. You've been mechavim yeheshmei rab. It's gabaldik. We had Zalach Psukah, that's certainly the shemes of Shema, and the shemes of the first Bracha Shemon Esrei, right? It's mamash a mitzvah, we have to be mechavim them. It's likuva. It's mamash, you have to be mechavim them. So I learned from them, you could do it. I didn't know myself. I learned from them how to learn Chumash, because I heard so many times the Chumash, Baruch Hashem, als kinderlich, we hear, you know, like a four-year-old and a five-year-old, we hear the Chumash over and over again, so things start to make sense that we don't really understand. And unless we sit down, I'm going to have to give a shit like these non-from guys. They're going to bury me tonight. I'm shot over here, right? It changes everything. To see the Eretzket, that they have a mitzvah, I will tell you that the greatest benefit that every Mekarev Rechaikim has is, it's what it does to his own Torah mitzvahs. What it does to our only Torah, and to the Frischkeit that they bring to our mitzvahs as Achlo Fela, has tremendous, tremendous benefits. So why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? Why do we not do Kir? By the way, anyone who has not signed in, please pass the paper around. Without signing in, we're not going to get anywhere. So it's very important to sign in. What are the reasons that we don't do it? What are the real reasons? So the emes is, there are many reasons we have. And I think the first reason is that we really don't care enough. You see, because there's us and there's them. It's never them. But it's still us and is them. And they're very different from us. You know, we Baruch Hashem, we have what we have, put our whole lives in it, there's them, Nebuch, what should we do? You know, there's us and there's them. And the emes is there's no such thing. There's no such thing between us and them. I'll tell you, Maisa Shahoya Gavaldika Maisa. I was in California probably 10 years ago. There was a big Discovery seminar there. Discovery is a... used to be the flagship program of Eshet Torah in terms of outreach, not in the yeshiva, but outside in the world. And it's like what we call, you know, the Arachim seminars, Gateways puts on pretty much the same seminar. But we were doing it for years and years and years. And so we did one in California, and we got a big movie star, a famous, famous actor, who started becoming Frommer. We got him to allow us to use his name. To sign up, and he advertised it for us. We had placards all over California, this picture on it, and we talked about 1,000 people came to that seminar. It was at a big theater at UCLA, and 1,000 people came to the seminar. It was a celebrity-studded event, as they call it, you know. But so I'm coming to California. I needed to raise money for something else at the time. Always, you know, involved in different kiddushin things. I was raising money then for a particular program in Eretz Yisrael. And I was volunteering for Discovery, so I called up a donor of mine in California, Chassidus Yid, Gua Haima Shiid, and I told him I'm in California anyway for something else. Could I come see him? He says, what are you here for? I said, Nastama, you probably even know there's this big seminar they're having, you know, this big movie star. Fadein Mr. Gekimin? I said, yeah. He says, I'm not going to see you. I said, why? And he starts giving me a whole thing about it. I'm telling you, he's a good man. He's a really good man, but he somehow thought there's us and there's them, and it's never the twain shall meet. Fine. So he wouldn't see me, What should I do? We get up, we do the seminar. In the middle of the seminar, a woman stands up to ask a question. And she asked us a question. We have a class called the Seven Wonders of Jewish History. She asked a question, a historical question. She says, Rabbi, as she's asking me the question, I don't mean, this is in front of 1,000 people, by the way, said, you know, I don't mean to demean the religion anyway. In fact, I have a very warm feeling about it. I'm very sincere in my question, and it matters to me a great deal. So I said, why does it matter to you a great deal? She said, my maiden name is Twersky. I did not marry a Jewish man. My children want to know if they should be Jewish or not. I figure being a descendant of the Baal Shem Tov, is what she told me, it's a very important question. Called the guy up, right after the seminar. I said, Badia Gunisht, Aba Shemska Einikel Geve? Badia Gunisht? He saw me. Not going to tell you what she gave, it's not important. What do you mean us and them? Do you know that for the majority of the history of Klal Yisrael, the majority of Jews living in a generation pretty much don't make it to the next generation? 10 times in history. 10 times it happens that a majority of Jews disappear. When you're talking about Golos Babel, you're talking about different Holocausts that happened to us, or the forced Shmadim. It was unbelievable what happened to us. Al Pi Cheshbin, there should be today in the world 200 million Jews. You know that? At least 200 million Jews. Probably more. There was a time that we had the same number of population as the Chinese. They have 1.2 billion today, and we never had more than 17 million. How did that happen? We had a very rough history. When Kleist was in Golos, the history was Gefährlich. It's a very, very rough history. So those who are still identifying as being Jewish today, who are they? They're the survivors of the survivors. So who do you think is more likely to survive? People with Yichus or people without Yichus? For sure people with Yichus. The Zchusim that are necessary to survive probably would dictate that these people have better genes, so to speak, when it comes to their Yiddishkeit. I have no question that every person in this room knows an ancestor of theirs who was a Gadol or a Rebbe. Everybody has Yichus in this room. Well, guess what? So do they. Because we're talking about Mamish, the Smetan of Klal Yisrael that's still around today, that still identifies as being Jewish. There's not a Jew out there who knows he's Jewish whose grandfather wasn't from. Or great-grandfather at the very worst. Because the whole movement only started about 4 generations ago. There's no such thing as a Yid who wasn't from until about 150, 200 years ago. There's no such thing. It's not Shaykh. I mean, there were people who didn't keep Kiyum Mitzvahs, but it's not like that, you know, an alternative lifestyle of what they called Reform. It didn't exist. That just didn't. By the way, the Einiklich of the original Reform people, none of them are Jewish. They're all Gishmat. Even people who weren't Reform, who just toyed around with it. I mean, later what happened to Moshe Mendelssohn, his children, his Talmidim, was unbelievable. And he was from. He just had some interesting ideas. Nishke Blit and Gordish, the great composer Mendelssohn, was a Geschmata, was an article of Moshe Mendelssohn. There's nothing left. So if someone still identifies as being Jewish, they're close to us. Very close to us. We're Am Echad. When we forget we're Am Echad, we're in a lot of trouble. And we are in a lot of trouble. I'd like to review with you some current events. If you're aware of what's going on. I've been glad to try to work with Rabbanim to try to create a Yom Tefillah. Because it's Eis Tzara. According to the Rambam, Tshuva during Eis Tzara is the Raisa, you know, the Rambam's Shita. I never thought that I would live in a time when I would see Jewish blood flowing through the streets. But we're living in a time when Jewish blood flows through the streets. So you'll tell me, why? It's not that the bombs are not falling in Eretz Yisrael and Sderot, they still are falling. They just don't report it anymore because it's not news. Do you know there are rockets fired almost every day still in Eretz Yisrael? There are children 7, 8, 9 years old who still can't go to sleep at night. They can't get a full night's sleep. They live in Sderot, they can't. They have trauma for the rest of their lives. And by us, Baruch Hashem, everything's good. Shalom Yili, Mishrius Libi Eilech. Everything's fine by us. Do you have any idea about the threat from Iran, what's really going on there right now? Does any of you truly appreciate what's going on? Do any of you doubt that this guy, Ahmadinejad, is serious? They should try to like to tell a story that someone met a Holocaust survivor. They asked him, what lesson did you learn from the Holocaust? He said, what lesson? Simple. When they say they want to kill you, they mean it. Isn't that the lesson? You have anybody's grandparents, great-grandparents still alive, Holocaust survivors? Did they thought they meant it then? I didn't think so. Hitler was saying it. He said in 1933, he said in 1935, he said in 1937. Nobody believed him. This guy has enough material now, according to the latest sources, to build 2 bombs already. Do you have any doubt that he plans to... Do you know what he does to his own Muslim cousins? I'll be a little gross with that. I hope you don't mind. He wants to cut off their heads. If they have little minhagim differently, like the Wahhabis and the other, like if you don't have the same minhagim as him, he cuts off their heads with a rusty knife. That's what he does. How do you think he feels about Eretz Yisrael? He already told the world what he feels about Eretz Yisrael. Le'aleinu, what is going on here? We're asleep. We think it's not a real threat. Did anybody know Malcolm Honlein? So from here, you know Malcolm Honlein? Speak to him about this. He's scared silly. He doesn't sleep at night because he's on the inside and he knows what's going on. The Israelis who really know what's going on, they're not sleeping at night. But Baruch Hashem was sleeping at night very well. If Mordechai had slept the day he found out about Haman's evil intentions, you and I wouldn't be here to talk about it today. Am I right? What can stop it? What can we do? I'm not a geopolitical genius. I'm not going to hijack a tank and assassinate Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. I can't do it, right? Achdus could do it. And the concept of there's us versus them is the biggest chesaron in Achdus that could be. We have to make 100% sure we recognize that Klal Yisrael is guf echad mamish. And chalila the averes that they're doing, nebuch lo'yaleinu, is shatuns. It has an effect on us. And the only way to take care of the despots, of the people who want to kill Klal Yisrael, who have Klal Yisrael in their sights, don't think Iran, by the way, is some backward third world country. Iran has a larger share of college graduates among its population than the United States of America. Until the Shah of Iran, they built it up. They have tremendous scientists there. They have people who know what they're doing. Don't minimize the threat. Klal Yisrael is in a whole lot of trouble, and what we're doing, hopefully, is what is needed to be done. So we have to recognize us versus them. The Gemara tells us, Klar, Maychaze de Dama de Dach Sumik Tvei. How do you know whose blood is redder before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam? Even if an enemy were to beleaguer us and demand that we give them a life, and there's two possible candidates, and one is the Rav von Stadt, and the other one is the biggest Avarian, the guy who eats the ice cream in front of the entire shul at 5 o'clock in Yom Kippur right before Nila when people are started out of their heads. He steals candies from babies. Who do you give to be killed? Neither one. How do you know it's Choshev? What do you mean, how do I know it's Choshev Rabbeinu Shel Olam? This is the Rav, and this is Agornish. You don't know. You just don't know. There are plenty of mises that people have heard to this extent. And it's emes. We just don't know. These yidden out there, you have no idea who these yidden are. You have no idea what schus obvious they have. You have no idea what schus they may have in their own backgrounds. I'll tell you a quick story, which I think the Olam maybe is familiar with. In the early 1950s, when the Medina was young, there was a theater right in the middle of what we would call today a very frum neighborhood, right where Strauss, King George, there was the Edison Theater. There was a theater there. It was open on Shabbos. There were many Afghanis in those days. It was open on Shabbos. As a Maisa, very well documented story, that there was a Yid Nebuch who was a Holocaust survivor, who was Tzibrach and a Yid, and every Friday night his enjoyment was going to the Edison Theater. And one night, his father comes to Menachalim. His father's an Erlich Yid who died in the Holocaust. He tells him, he begs him, my kin says, how can you be Mechal Shabbos? You're losing your whole Olam Haba. How can you be Mechal Shabbos? He says, Cholim, garnished. Next Friday night, he goes again to the theater. Same thing happens, the dream reoccurs. He's a little spooked out, but shkeferlich. Third time he has the dream, it starts to bother him a little bit. Next Friday night, he goes to the theater, and he sees his father, he's not sleeping. He sees his father wearing tachrichim standing by the theater. He says, Chadach Shegizot, I told you, what's happening to you? And it spooked him out completely. So he had a friend of his who was a Frumayid. He said, this is what happened to me, what should I do? Is it real or not? His friend says, I don't know. Go to the Chazanish. They went to the Chazanish in Bnei Brak, and the man tells over the Chazanish the story. The Chazanish is standing there, he's mulling his spiros. He says to him, Zogmeh, what kind of a schus do you have that they're intervening mamish bina shemayim that you should come back into tshuva? There's got to be some schus you have. He looks to the chaznish, he says, chvestish, I don't know. Never was anything special. Even the haim, I wasn't really a from yid. I don't know. He said, no, think about it. And he thought. He said, efsha einzach. He says, what is it? He says, I was running away from the Nazis with my father. My father was already sick, he was old. We're running away from the Nazis. And we're traveling through the woods, through the forest, not to get caught by the Nazis. And we come upon a cholo, we come upon a Yid Nebuch who was killed by the Germans. He was a Meis Mitzvah. So the father turns to me and says, the Yid's a Meis Mitzvah, we have to bring him to Kfaris Yisrael. So I said, Tata, they're shooting at us, it's a Nate, we gotta do this. My father was weak already, so I took this body, and I carried him 15 kilometers. We didn't bury him in the forest. We buried him. He came to Kfaris Yisrael. We buried him in a Yiddish Beis HaKfaris. Chaznir said, Otodasidas! You have no idea the schusim that these yidden could have. You have no idea what schusavas they may have. You have no idea who these people are. I'll tell you another maisa. Heard this maisa from Hill David. Many years ago, there was a couple that got married, and Baruch Hashem, they got married in the summertime. And Kedarkenu Bakaidish, they were going to have the Sheva Brachas up in the mountains by a bungalow. Of course, today they're not called bungalows, but in the summer home of one of the Machatonim, some of the parents of the Kala. And it wasn't a summer home, it was a summer estate. I mean, they had Baruch Hashem. And they ordered a caterer to come up and cater the entire Shabbos, of course. And the caterer that they ordered was somebody from New York. And punked on this Friday, when this caterer gets into his truck and goes to the, starts to drive up, this anti-Semit of a governor, Pataki, decides we have to pave over Route 17. Pinked in the summer, and didn't even have to go up to the mountains. Nope. So the caterer left a little too late. Too many lanes were closed. To make a long story short, the frum guy is in the truck. He's got all the food with him. And it's fast approaching, and he's still on Route 17. He's parked on the biggest parking lot in the world. He's going nowhere. So he calls up his boy and says, what should I do? So the boss says, Erlich, he says, the first thing is, get off the highway and get yourself to a motel somewhere. You should be able to keep Shabbos. So the boy's up. He goes on the shoulder of the road to the next exit. He gets to the next exit. He's in the middle of Yehupitz. He's no place. He's never heard of the towns, of the signs, nothing. Never been there once in his life. And it doesn't look any too Jewish over there. And he's thinking to himself, what a miserable Shabbos he's going to have. All alone, ever, you know, some hotel someplace. You know, terrible. And he pulls into the parking lot, the first hotel that he sees, and he sees a line of Frumma Yidden going all the way up, because a lot of people left too late that Friday. And they're all cursing themselves, saying, "Hey, how can I leave without taking any food with me? What am I going to eat all Shabbos?" He pulls up with the truck, and they come out. He says, "Help me unload quick before Shabbos." They unload the truck. There's thousands of dollars worth of food in the truck. And the people spent the Shabbos better than any Shabbaton that you can imagine. The Ruchnias was half of a fella, because everyone recognized it was Mamish Maisanisim. The Eberstadt Mamish Geschickmon. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can imagine what Friday night davening was like in this motel. It was half of a fella. They were singing and dancing. It was Mayredik. It was Mayredik. The Friday night Suda, they sang till 2 o'clock in the morning. It was Mayredik. It was unbelievable. Shabbos morning, they never said good there. But other than that, it was Mamish. It was beautiful. And it was Gevaldik. After Shalashur, this is over, they dav Mayrev. All the men decide to exchange phone numbers. They figured they weren't thrown together for nothing. The Rebbe Shlomo brought them there for a reason, and they're all exchanging phone numbers with each other, and not a single man called anybody else. You know why? Because they're men. If they were women, you could be sure they would have kept in touch. But that's the way men are. Nobody called anybody. 3 weeks later, the guy driving the truck, the caterer, he gets a phone call. He says, hello? He says, yeah. My name is John. John who? John. We met at the hotel a few weeks ago. He makes a cheshbon. John. Berl Givain. Shmili Givain. Dubin Givain. John, there was no John there. He says, excuse me, but I don't think I met you. He says, no, you met. I was working behind the desk. Oh. He says, did I leave a toothbrush in my room? He says, no. He says, what is it? He says, listen, I don't want to tell you this, but I happen to be Jewish. He says, okay. He says, I grew up in one of those self-hating families. My family originally was from New York, you know, when the religious Jews started coming in, my father got very nervous, moved us out, and he tried to find a town that there were no Jews. And he kept telling us how terrible these religious Jews are, and they smell bad, and they're cheap, and there's all kinds of things he told us about the Jews. And you know, and I have to tell you the truth, I believe it. I believed every word of it. So he got the other end of the line and says, yeah. He says, but you understand. And then you drove him with the truck. You had all these Jews who were there. They all lined up a line. They came there. There must have been $5,000 worth of food in that truck. He said, yeah. He said, well, you know, we have refrigeration. You could have asked us, you could have used our refrigerators, but you opened up the truck to everybody. You shared it with everybody. You are unbelievable. I never saw something like this. And the friendliness. My father said, you guys were like, you know, terrible people. The warmth and the camaraderie. It was unbelievable. And then you're singing songs. I don't know. Jews have their own songs. He says, okay. So what can I do for you? He says, what you can do for me? I want in. I'm a Jew too. So Rabbi Hillel David like this. This John, if he still identifies as being Jewish in the year 2000, let's say it was 2004 when the story happened, that means that he probably had a Zayda or an Elta Zayda, you don't have to go too far back, who probably died al Kiddush Hashem. It's the overwhelming likelihood. And if it wasn't Elta Zeta. Unfortunately, so many gzeiras between the Cantonists and the Nazis. I mean, it just went on and on and on. Which means that it's very likely that his Zeta went to the Kisei HaKavod.
I died on Kiddush Hashem, on Kiddush Mecha. And my Uncle John is rotting away and nobody looks at him. I'm telling you, if you just give him the opportunity, if you show him the other side, no one's ever shown him the other side. All he hears is this stupid stuff about it. You show him the other side, I will show you that my John is going to do the right thing.
Well, I'm Echad. Chalila to think that we're two people. Well, I'm Echad. There's a second misconception we have to deal with. First misconception, we think that it's us versus them. There's no such thing. And they, by the way, think that we'll look down upon them because of that. They think that every from here, and it's important to share with them, but that we don't. And I'll tell you a beautiful story. A sister-in-law of mine is shopping in a very nice supermarket in Muncie. And you know, she's put together. She looks, you know, like very put together. And as she's shopping, a lady comes over to her, who's obviously either not from or either completely not from or somewhat not from. She wasn't wearing the tznias dress. And she goes over to my sister-in-law, and mistaking her for one of her own, she turns to her and she says, "You see those people?" And she points to see them shopping the other aisles. "Those people, they're so rude. They're so uneducated. They're so unfriendly." Sister Mubarak Shab, she has a great head on her shoulders. So she says, "Wow, what a coincidence, you told me that." He says, "You really? Why?" He says, "Because one of them just told me the same thing about you." And they're both MS. We look down on them, they look down on us, and they're both MS. It's so important to take a moment and to try to dispel that notion. To tell them this halacha of my chazda, the Dhamma Dach Summa Tvei, it's priceless. That halachically we don't know who's better. The Gemara tells us we don't know who's better. So Chalila, we're not allowed to look down upon them, and we have to let them know that. Number two, some of them will say, if you try to approach someone to do some kirov, they'll say, "You're kidding, you're going to make me religious." Religion takes away the pleasure of life. You take away pleasure. My whole life is not what I do. You take away my pleasure. Nothing could be further from the truth. I want to tell you a fantastic story. About 20 years ago, when I was new in kirov, we were with Karev, a guy's name was Greg. And this Greg, he was an unbelievable young man. He wasn't from at all. But he was a business broker. He was a very wealthy guy. He had his own plane. He used to fly. He had two offices in LA and New York. Fly back and forth on his own. He was a tennis pro. Very good looking. He had it all. And he was becoming frum. So we had this chash. Maybe he won't go all the way becoming frum. Because maybe he thinks you can't be frum and have a good life. So we went ahead and we set him up with a family on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And we went to show them, this was a very wealthy family. They had taken a number of apartments. Those apartments, every one of those apartments was like $2 million. And they combined several of them together. I mean, it was magnificent where they lived, at the Upper West Side. We wanted to show them you could live well. You know, they had a chauffeur-driven limousine. It was a very, very wealthy family. In case you know who the family is, you don't, okay? So we sent them for Shabbos, sent Greg for Shabbos. Good! It was Shabbos Hanukkah, I remember. Months of Shabbos, we were nervous, we hoped that it went well, you know, so we called up Greg right away. He said, "Greg, how was it?" He says, "It started out pretty weird." So what happened? He says, "We come Friday night to the meal, and they're all sitting at the table, and they're staring at me, and they're silent. I figured maybe my yarmulke was inside out. You know, maybe it wasn't, you know, like tzinias or something. I didn't know what to think. So finally, you know, I'm not a shy guy. I go, "What?" Like, "What is it?" And the head of the household said, "Why are you doing this? After all, you've got it all." I said, "Greg, what did you say?" He says, "Are you kidding? I got up there." And I said, "I've got it all?" He says, "You people don't appreciate what you have." He said, "In my family, we have a family meal once a year. Called Thanksgiving. And we don't make it to the end of the meal without fighting. Because we don't know how to get along with each other. And you do this three times on Shabbos alone?" He says, "You get together and you sing together? There are children who even know their parents. There are children who love their parents. There are children who are intact in families. There are people who are honest with each other. There are people who care about each other. And you're asking me why I'm doing it? And then I gave them the five levels of pleasure from Noach Weinberg. And he was very effective because the head of that household eventually became a volunteer Kira person. He did. He went on to teach for years and years and years. He was blown away by this guy. Rabbi Isai, take away the pleasure of life. Do you have any idea what we've got? Do you have any idea what it means? What the joy that we bring to life? Do you know what the number one problem in American life is today? It's a lack of meaning, a lack of happiness. People are not happy. They're walking around in life like robots. They're chasing a dream that even when they do get it, you know, they finally get it, it takes them until they're 54 years old, and they get a midlife crisis, and they got nothing. They don't know what's going on. They have to go buy a new car that they don't even know how to drive it so fancy. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable what people are doing today. The meaninglessness of life is half of a fella today. Everyone's searching for meaning. They're searching into the craziest places. Why are people so addicted to entertainment? Because they can't stand for a few minutes to be with themselves, to be alone and talk to themselves a little bit and ask themselves, so how am I doing? It's a very terrifying question today. Every year it has an opportunity, every single moment, to do a davar tov. We can do this that defines ourselves with the tarig mitzvahs that we have. It's the chafla v'fela what we have. What Shabbos is all about, the concept of a Shabbos, is myridik. It's an unbelievable thing that we could do. We've got it. We've got it and they want it. We like to think somehow, we look down upon ourselves. What we have, they're dying to have. So religion doesn't take the pleasure out of life. But probably, if anyone's going to have a truly fulfilled life, it's not going to come from any place outside of religion. Even for them, and even they understand this. So what can we do about it? We like to think that kiruv is very difficult. Because the biggest problem, I think, the biggest barrier to all of us doing kiruv is we're afraid that we won't know what to say when they ask us a question. It's ironic. We've been in yeshiva for many years, many of us. They might ask us a question, I can't answer. It doesn't stop you from walking the base matters in BMG, right? That's more likely, by the way, they'll ask you a question you can't answer. So what's going on here? What's the pshat? The answer is because we're going to feel stupid. Here I am from a yid, and I learned kama v'kama sechtes, and ich kenne bezogne Rabbi Kiva Eger. And I can't, what am I going to say? I'm going to feel stupid. So the first thing you have to recognize is there's a perfectly valid answer for every question that you don't know the answer to. And the answer is, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. The first thing you do is you praise the question and you praise the question. Wow, that's a great question. That's a terrific, you know, you're really, what's he going to do because of that? He's not going to be friend. You see, the whole concept of kiruv is to create an opportunity for a one-to-one interaction. That's what kiruv is. And if they ask you something you can't answer, but you say, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. I'm going to research and get back to you. You've already set up a second one-to-one encounter. And the gold in this business is the one-to-one encounter. The more time you can spend doing things for the person, the more time you can spend engaged with the person, the more time you have something to talk about the person, the more chances you have at being a kind of person. It's all about one-to-one interactions. Now, I'm not going to, Chalila, say that anyone should ever do anything with them, mafakpek, whether it's appropriate for them. But if you want to bring someone to your house that you're afraid might do something terrible, 100%, you have to be careful. But there are so many fantastic opportunities that exist all the time. I Baruch Hashem, Gever Toshav Anochi Yemochem, I'm not living in Lakewood a long time, but I did move in here about 5 months ago, Baruch Hashem. And I'm probably the only person who ever bought a house that came with a pool that didn't see the pool before they bought the house. So I didn't care. I didn't know if I was going to keep it or fill it up with sand. And in the end, we opened the pool. So I went into Pool Town over here. It's a place on Route 9, Pool Town. Right? And I was in there 2 or 3 times, and I couldn't tell if the people were Jewish or not. I figured one time I'll risk it. And I go over to the guy, and I tell the guy, I said, you know, I really don't know anything about pools. After all, what can I know about pools? I'm from Brooklyn. Brooklyn, we don't have pools. So I said, you know what you're going to be to me? You're going to be my rabbi. That's what I told him. And the guy stops and he looks at me and he says, I also grew up in Brooklyn. And I can tell you I'm Jewish, but I'm no rabbi. There's a guy, the manager of the store, his name is Les, those of you who go into there. He's a Jewish guy. He's a wonderful guy. He's a very nice guy. And now we talk about Shabbos, he's unbelievable. He's like eating out of my, I come, he could be 10 customers. He gets up, and I come in, and he takes care of me. It's unbelievable. It's half, You see, it's all the one-to-one interaction. Now, I'd love to report to you that Baruch Hashem, you know, he's wearing a gartel by davening. I don't know that we'll get there, to be honest with you. But I don't know that we have to get there. If I could just keep the interaction going, I know he's going to identify as being more Jewish. I know he's going to not only not shy away from Yid when he comes into the store, but he's going to attach himself to them. The one-to-one is what it's all about. If you're on a line, first of all, the first concept is just don't make a Chilul Hashem. The staff of HUK, Eish HaTorah in England, a number of years ago, were given 10 smart cars. If you've seen the smart cars, I think Jamar has one over here. They just bought one and it has a what's called a wraparound advertising on it, where they paint the whole car with your advertising message. So someone who owned a Mercedes-Benz dealership in London donated a lease for 2 years of 10 smart cars to the rabbis, 10 of them. And it said Eish HaTorah with all the message on it. It was very, very nice. So I asked for Naftali Shift, the head of the Eish branch. I said, no, how do I drive in the car? It's like all glass, like a glass bubble. Has like a, you know, if you've seen them around, these tiny little cars, two-seaters. He says, it's fun to drive, but I can't stand it. I said, why? He says, are you kidding? How would it look if I cut someone off in traffic? They could all see I'm a rabbi. So I should turn all over the place, right? Rabbi Isai, we are all, every single one of us, we all have the ability to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim with the simplest things because of the way we look. Everyone has guessed by this point in time that you're from, you know what I'm saying? They know you're from. And what we do speaks volumes about HaKadosh Baruch Hu to these people. It does. If we're edel and we're refined, if an older person standing in line in the supermarket and you give them your place, what have you done? If you're bringing the mail for an older person, if you're living near the country place or somebody with some elder Jews who are not from at all, and you just before you go to the store, you knock on their door and say, can I pick something up for you? What have you done? I cannot tell you how many Russian families we were Makarev the last 2 decades, and we didn't do it by persuading them. They were smarter than us, and they studied more philosophy than we did, and they were bigger atheists than anybody in the world, and they became Frumatin. You know why? Because when they needed an apartment, we found them an apartment. We became their experts in America. When they needed to open an account with the phone company, we went to them to the phone company. When they needed food stamps, we went to them to the Social Security office. We did it. And then when they needed to know where to send a kid in yeshiva, they asked us to. The one-to-one relationship is not a good thing. It is everything when it comes to Kiruv. We have the koyach. If I don't give you any methodologies, we're going to go into methodologies. But if I don't, even if I didn't give you any methodologies at all, if I gave you zip, zero, nothing, if we didn't share anything when it comes to methods of doing Kiruv, but you just go out and you do the right thing by somebody and you're sweet to them and you're nice to them and you please and thank you, which by the way, I have to tell you, in Lakewood is very beautiful compared to where I used to live. It really is. It really is. I see it all the time. I see that not only do people go into Target, they don't only run away, not run away from them from you, but they seem to be quite friendly. It's different than I experienced other places. It must be that the people there are nicer to them. And it's a big Kiddush Hashem, you should know. But when we do it, it's half of a fellow what you could do, because it's all about the one-to-one relationship. That's what it's about. That's how Kiruv is done. By the time you can approach somebody and make a suggestion to them, and you have all these handouts that you have here, there's so many tools. The brilliance of Project Inspire is that it's called Stupid Proof Kiruv. It's Kiruv for Dummies. Even if you never did Kiruv in your life, it's so easy to do. You give it, Rabbi Wolf is here. There are cards you could give out. There are sites that you can, with the internet today, although we have to be very careful in our own homes, but these people who are on the internet anyway, the things that are available to them today, I can't tell you, forget about how many people came from, how many Gerim I've met from the internet. And the only site they went to was H.com. That's all they did. They became Gerim. I met them. I meet them all over the world. These people come over to me. They tell me, you know, Rabbi Milstein, you know, you helped me become Jewish. I said, me? What did I do? I said, I read your article. I read your article. That was it for me. You know, I started my search, and then there's so many stories like that. The tools that are available, Haflo Fella, Project Inspire created a concept of called the e-group. And the e-group is that everybody who signs up, those of you who admit to having email addresses, if you don't have email addresses, you can still do it. I'll tell you how in a moment. But those of you who admit to having email addresses, what happens is we're going to challenge you every single week to spend 10 minutes on a Kiruv Pu'ula. My father's Zecher Levracha was in a Vardika. In the Vardika they had Pu'ulas, Musadika Pu'ulas. You did things, of course, the things that people talk about, like asking for the nails in the jewelry store, like that kind of stuff. I don't think they did that much. But Pu'ulas, Vatuv Ketam Pu'ulas and Musar. Pu'ulas in Kiruv, which is if you have a relative that you haven't spoken to in 5 years, and you don't say one word about Yiddishkeit, you call them up to say hello, that counts as a Kirov Pula. Because remember, it's the one-to-one relationship. If you recognize someone as being Jewish on the street, and you go over to them and you say, good Shabbos, it's a Kirov Pula. You can count that. Spending 10 minutes a week, and then it's obligatory that you report to your email group. You'll get, once your email addresses are here, they will contact you. You report to your email group what it is that you did. If you have a question about what to do, every email group and this, you're going to be your own group. This gathering, this Asifa Kadosha right here tonight, is going to be its own group. You'll be assigned a Kirov counselor. Be someone who will answer your Kirov questions, who will hold your hand and guide you for whatever you need. We will do whatever is necessary to be done. We're going to make it stupid-proof. We're going to make it foolproof. It's so easy to do. And by the way, you cannot fail. It's not possible to fail. Because if you try, you've already succeeded. If you try, then no longer are their averis, do they have your address on it. Because Khalil, if we don't try, then their averis have our address because of Arvis. And if you try, if you just do it, just try the smallest thing, you've already done something. So we're making it as easy as possible to do. That's what Project Inspire is. So I'm urging every one of you to sign up. I'm urging every single one of you to become part of the group. Those who don't, if you have your phone number, we have the same thing. You call in, you'll have a telephone number to call. You call in, you'll tell them about your Kirov Pu'ula. It will be published, someone will type it up, send it to the other people on email. And you can get via phone, by the way, the other people's pulis, you can get that as well. All set up for you, but the ikar is to join the group and to sign up. If you don't sign up, we can't help you. I'd like to give you now, for a moment, I'd like to take what we call an idea share, to share an idea, to show you how easy it is to share. By the way, Eish HaTorah happens to have the Kotel cam. It's a camera that's focused on the Kotel Maravi all the time. By the way, I know a lot of people, Anshei Shleimenu, who as a bank tzamul, you know, especially on a Matzah Shabbos, you know, somebody that have to go to the Kaisel, they log on. Not again, if you don't have internet, don't get internet. Chalil, I'm not telling you to do it. But it's a Meyerdik experience. So Rabbi Chaim Sanson, what he likes to do is, when he's in Manhattan and he goes into a skyscraper building or whatever business he has, and so, you know, usually you get into these buildings, they have large elevators. How many people fit an elevator? 30 people fit an elevator. What do people do in an elevator in Manhattan usually? How do they interact? They look up at the ceiling, they look at the floor, they look at the changing floors on the panel. They find it fascinating, by the way. But they all avoid making eye contact with the other because we're New Yorkers, that's where we are, right? He will try to spy out somebody he thinks might be Jewish. He'll go and say, so, you ever been to Israel in your life? And the guy might be a little, but it's not a terrible question to ask someone. He says, no. He says, would you like to go? The guy says, yeah. He takes out a conference bag, he says, here, you can go tonight. He has the address of the camera that's focused on. You can go tonight. He says, I do it also. I used to live in Israel for 5 years, but now I go. I go, right? It's unbelievable. It's just like being there. It's just like being there, right? What's the guy? And he says, by the way, while you're on the site already, you can check out some of the fantastic articles. Things that you could give away to people. A CD, a book. You have in the, we're going to give out these booklets, these handouts. You can... tens of ideas and some things that are produced actually by Project Inspire. For example, before Yom Tov, before Rosh Hashanah, they have a honey dish. And if you go to a neighbor who's not yet from, and you simply knock at the door and say, I want you to have a sweet year. It's customary in the Jewish people. What do they say? I can't stand Jews? Like, what do you get a patch for it? But Kupnish can patch the fire, that's for sure, right? Before Purim, they have Shalach Manis kits for $5 or $4. $4 Shalach Manis. And in the Shalach Manis, you pay them the $4, the Project Inspire. They send it out, by the way, you can see it's not a big money maker for them. It's not a big profit maker. And in there, they have a card in there. Or they have a tape, a book. Or if you hear a tape that you think they might be interested in, just to give someone something. It is so easy. It's easier than ever before. It's easier than ever before. I want to address the concept of pleasure. It's quite late. I want to address the concept of pleasure as an idea share today. We said before that some Jews are blocked from becoming more frum because they're afraid, you're going to tell me being religious to take away my pleasure in life. This is Mesillas Yesharim. The first paragraph of Mesillas Yesharim says that it's kedai that a person, kedai shiyasu b'chol ma'abati b'chol ma'gamasai, it's kedai a person should place all of his effort and all of his focus on one thing, and what would that thing be? To ask the question, if you be medayik the lashon, you see he doesn't say to get the answer to the question. It's kedai if a person lives their entire life for one thing and one thing alone, just to ask the question, why am I here? That's what he starts with. And what is the answer? We were created to take pleasure from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Human beings were created to take pleasure from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean? Avada taniga miti zangam abo. But you cannot deny that there's an amount of pleasure that we get in this world which is mamish unbelievable. It's mamish hafla lefela. For example, do you happen to know whether or not mammals can see in color? Mammals. The species that we call mammals, can they see in color or not? Does anyone know? So all mammals are colorblind, except for human beings. Every giraffe, every cow, every dog, baboon, they're all colorblind. Human beings get to see in living color. How many colors can a person decipher using his eyes? How many different colors can we tell apart in terms of shades and even hues of color? Does anyone have any idea? There is a number. It's 16.8 billion. Listen to this. The human being can be mavchin between 16.8 different color experiences in the eye. You have to ask yourself the question, what is that good for? What is it good for? Someone said red light, green light. That's only two. What is this for? You have to admit, it's an amazing amount of engineering to put in an item that's smaller than a golf ball. I mean, it's myriadic, right? The best computers we have can only decipher, I don't know, you know, a billion colors, you know? And the little eyeball itself, 16.8 billion colors. Like, what's the shot? Like, what's it for? And you can think about it as much as you want. And the only thing you're going to find out it's good for is, if you've ever seen a sunrise in Yosemite National Park or a sunset, and you only had the ability to appreciate 200 colors simultaneously, you'd look at it, you go, not bad. But because you can see in 16.8 billion colors, and you have the unique ability to be able to tell the point exactly at which the golds cross over to the reddish tinges, and the reddish tinges turn into the browns, and it's all filtered by different texture of clouds with the dramatic blue backdrop of the sky, that you go, wow! And that's what it's for. It doesn't have another purpose. How many different taste experiences exist for a human being? They're afraid to answer, right? It's many tens of thousands. There are tens of thousands. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu do it? Kadosh Baruch Hu certainly had the achilas to take all the nutrients that we need, put them in a single apple, and say, nah, have a nice life. But they're sweet and pungent and sour and salty and spicy and Szechuan, Vietnamese, stir-fried, wok-fried, crispy, crunchy, creamy. What's this for? It's not for our pleasure. The ability to appreciate music. Do we not have an unbelievable... You ever see a cow, like with earbuds, you know? It's only for human beings. Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu do that? It's not Lisanah Hashem. We're not used to thinking this way, because we're B'nai Torah. But if you speak to someone who's not yet from, you say, think about it for a second. Can you see that there's a tremendous amount of engineering and intent and genius that go into making your life an amazing pleasure? What about companionship? Where it says, I have rusa misusa, yeah? You ever see like a raccoon and a muskrat kicking back a bear after a difficult day at work, sharing the events of the day before? It's all human. These are all human things. We get to have friendships. We get to have relationships. Think about it for a moment. It's all the more a pella, the fact that we know that it's not, that this world is only the test. This world is garnish. It's the Erev Shabbos. This is nothing. And in this nothing world already, I mean, when you take the written test for a driver, except for a driver's license, yeah, do you expect to have leather seats over there and power windows? No, there they have a hard iron bench. I'm not taking the test. They're garnished, right? And we get to take the test, and we're surrounded by pleasures that you can't even begin to imagine. The concept we call art. Like, what in your survival depends upon you being able to have art? Can you see that there's something going on here? Is it clear Kadosh Baruch Hu created? So how does it make sense that Kadosh Baruch Hu creates this for our pleasure? How does this make sense to us? Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu do that? Now, we ask a why question. There are two basic motivations to every why question. The two most basic motivations, whenever you can ask a why question about why we do stuff, the two most basic motivations are Toiv and Ra. If you think about it, everything boils down to either a Toiv or a Davar Ra. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do for us? Stick with me for 90 seconds. There are two men who are working out in the gym. One of them is a world champion weightlifter. 9 times he got the world title of being best weightlifter in the world. The other guy is a 90-pound weakling, got sick and tired of his friends beating him up in school, stealing his cell phone, kicking sand in his face. He decides, that's it, I'm going to sign up. And he's been working out now for a week in the gym. What happens to a 90-pound weakling who's working out for a week? He's a 92-pound weakling. Can't do more than that in a week. One night they're working out together. It's It's closing time at the gym. The two of them go home. And the next morning in the paper, you read that one of them, on the way home, picked on someone weaker than himself and beat him up to make himself feel good. Which one was it? Money Power Weekly, of course. The big guy's got nothing to prove, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu is a toif. Kadosh Baruch Hu has no chisorin. Ra is always based upon chisorin. You go to yeshiva, you have a good day in yeshiva, then when you come home, your little brother and your sister will have a good day too. But as a little kid, when you went to yeshiva, you had a bad day in yeshiva, your little brother's going to have a bad day, your little sister's going to have a bad day, your parents, everyone's going to have a bad day. You got it? Because when we don't feel wholesome with ourselves, we don't feel Muslim, when we feel there's something missing in ourselves, then you know what? We do things that are evil. We do things that are bad. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no chisar. And you ever wonder why HaKadosh Baruch Hu bothered to put 150 billion visible stars in the sky? There are 150 billion visible stars. Did you know that? And that's in our galaxy. There are 150 billion galaxies. I'm not talking any kfira here. I'm not talking about science and Torah. This is everyone's mind that this is Emes. 150 billion galaxies. 150 billion. Could maybe a Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying to send you a message. He's a little bigger than that guy in the gym. So if there's no chisar in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it took more energy for the universe to form than exists in the entire universe. It means a Kadosh Baruch Hu is possessed of unlimited energy, unlimited qualities and everything, unlimited idea, unlimited genius, unlimited everything. And there's no chisar. When there's no chisar, there could be no ra. It's only taif. And what taif did HaKadosh Baruch Hu decide to give us? Lisanag al Hashem v'lanois v'zishchin asai. And you can get it on the physical level. You can get it on the emotional level. You can get it by being like HaKadosh Baruch Hu and loving other people. By the way, Meir Dikazach, in I guess what we call today's parasha, Bila Barasha, Kadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and makes a bria for him that was never ever Erev Shabbos ben Hashmash, it's the Pia Asim. Listen to this. For who? For a bandit, for a lowlife, for a mushchis. You know who Bilam was? He's a Veltz mushchis. Kadosh Baruch Hu makes something that's totally outside of the bria for him. It's never used, the Pia Asim's never used again. It's one use, the Pia Asim, Bilam Arasha. Which shows us that Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying to bring back Bilam. Snishtegens. Just look at the Sipurna. Sipurna says it. Kadosh Baruch Hu, on some level, I hate to say it, Kibayachal, he loves Bilam. Can you imagine how he feels about you? Can you imagine how he feels about every single person out there? Kadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world of pleasures that's unimaginable for every single one of us. You're afraid that you're not going to have pleasure? Come. You want pleasure, I'll show you about pleasure. You want to know how to have more success in your relationships? Yeah, the world is bankrupt when it comes to relationships. Come, we'll see what the Torah has to say about it. We'll learn the difference between Ahava Tluya B'davar and Ahava Heina Tluya B'davar. We'll learn the difference between someone who sees something they like, they see a certain look or a certain this, or a bank account, or a reputation, or a celebrity. I want that person, they think they're in love. That's Ahava Tluya B'davar, Batla Dava, Batla Ahava. Ahava is all about giving. It's all about being generous. It's all about just doing for the other person. That's what it's all about. Come, we'll teach you about it. Just to give you an idea of the riches that are here that you can share with people. I will tell you that there are people that I've spoken to and worked with that told me literally, that after the first time we met, when I just discussed with them the Jewish approach to love, it changed their lives completely. I will tell you that, and we're going to, B'ezras Hashem, hopefully next week, do a little bit in terms of the proof of the evidence of the Amitas HaTorah, where people told me that they were not just atheists, but they published on the subject. And after one sitting down, opened up that and said they're no longer atheists. We have the power. I want to make that clear, but I also want to make clear, if you do none of that, and you just set up a one-to-one relationship, you will be fabulously successful, because you'll fulfill the obligation that we all have for Kirov. So B'ezras Hashem, I'm hoping that next week we all come together again. I'm hoping that you'll bring other people as well. I'm hoping there'll be a line outside the door. You won't be able to get in. One session is not dependent on the other one to get something out of it. I'm really urging everybody to make sure, if there's anyone who didn't sign up yet, please sign up. I think that we all want a chelik in this. And B'ezras Hashem, when we'll be misached and we're going to do care of the way we're supposed to do it, I'm sure that the B'as Goyal will not be far behind. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you. You could have said it already, right?
No, you didn't hear that much. You always need that chizuk. You always. Yes.
Which people are you talking about?
All the fun people like.
The characters? That's we want them to sign up and do this. Huh? No, that's for sure. It starts with you. Good to see you. That's not. This is a backdoor effort. Because we're finding people get up. I agree. But the other thing is, they hire people. No, I'm saying. A little something, so we can get them involved. We're going to rely on it. It's got to start somewhere. So I'm really asking people to bring others next on Matzah Shabbos.
I know you said these guys do like big books. They really helped on it. You know, when you're in the beginning, you're lost.
No, so Torah links has somebody. No. I want to make it clear. The many who would like to have tried to make this happen. We've tried this before. It seems that with this dire, with this generation, there is more of a response. Can we hear Blah Blah? Okay, so what are you talking about? I'm asking why they I have an answer that sticks to me. But I'm not.